This is Talking of Books with Isabel Abuhul, John McDonald, and the rest of the team.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
Only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
And welcome to Talking of Books. You've got me, Yvette Judge, and I will be joined very, very soon by Isabel Abuhul. Now, Isabel has an excellent reason for being a couple of minutes late this morning. She was immersed in reading. So she was so engrossed in her book that she lost track of time. But she's in the studio now and just getting herself ready. And today we are joined by Louise and Mary Rose. And we've got a very special day. It's my favourite show of the year because we're talking all about children's books. We always do a prize award show in October for the Booker Prize when that's announced. And this is our children's version. So today we are celebrating the shortlist for the Carnegie and Kate Greenaway medals, and the awards are announced on Monday. So these two are the UK's oldest and most prestigious children's book awards. 2017 is their 80th year, and they really are seen as the gold standard in children's literature. In the past, people like Arthur Ransome, C.S. Lewis, Terry Pratchett, Philip Pullman have won the Carnegie. And for the Greenaway, we've had Shirley Hughes, Janet Ahlberg, Lauren Child, Chris Riddell, and many, many more. So for the first segment of the show, we are going to be focused very much on books for the younger age group, the Greenaway. Although that's not necessarily true. I'm just going to eat my words as they've come out of my mouth. Because some of these books are not for young children. I think that's something really that we need to emphasise, that the Greenaway is the illustration award, but it's illustration for any age group. So we're not necessarily talking about books that are just for three-year-olds. In fact, some of the books that are in there are definitely for much older children. So, Mary Rose, welcome. Welcome back.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. So just introduce yourself. Tell us what your qualification is to be sitting in that chair with all those beautiful books. Why are you here?
Yes, good question. I'm not sure. I'm the librarian at Heartland International.
That's why you're here.
That's why I'm here, because I read lots of these books to lots of the children in our school.
Excellent. So you've got hands-on experience, and I think you have actually tested some of these out. You've got consumer feedback.
I do, on one or two of them.
Fantastic.
Yes, I had a good time last week asking children their advice and what they thought and which
Brilliant.
One they thought was the best. So it was good. It was good fun.
Brilliant. And Louise, you come at this from a slightly different angle. Obviously, you've had your own children. You've read to them.
I have read a number of picture books over the years and still do. When we're feeling a bit fed
Indeed.
Up, that's what we do.
But Louise Edensor is actually at Middlesex University.
I am, yes. I actually teach children's literature. We have a degree in early years, which is for practitioners who working with children up to five. So one of the modules that they do in the third year is children's literature. So I teach it, and we look at some absolutely fantastic picture books like these with lots of illustrations, and we talk about how we might choose between them, and we talk about how we could exploit them to develop children's cognitive, emotional, intellectual needs doing activities from them.
And coming at it from quite a different angle, from quite an academic angle. And it's not often you hear the words, as I did a few minutes ago, postmodernist children's picture books.
Yes.
What can I say?
Would Oliver Jeffers come into that league?
Yes.
Because I've got one of his latest books. Hello, I'm Isabel. I'm so sorry I'm late. I just got so caught up in the pages of a story that I then suddenly looked at my watch and thought, my goodness, I'm cutting it fine. But here I am. Oliver Jeffers has this alphabet book which goes through A to Z. You've seen it. And
I
just thought, which child on earth is going to like this? It's got Enigma in there. It's got all these burning your bridges. It's got all these sort of sayings. And yet I read it to my 5.5-year-old grandson, and it's one of his favourite books. So somehow or other it appeals. Mm-hmm. Louise, have you come across that book? It is strange, yeah. Isn't it?
We have it in our library, actually.
Was that on the Greenaway shortlist last year? I've got a feeling it might have been.
It could have been.
It may well have been. It's a, it's a wonderful book. And actually, the children just love looking at the pictures. And, and there's something about the size of it. And the and it feels very important when you carry it. Yeah. But then it's got lovely things. It's a lovely book, actually. It's one of the ones.
And you have to look to see the enigma. You have to look on. It tells you which page to look on. The burning the bridges bit is really, there's these two neighbours on either side of a bridge. So one of them burns the bridge, but then he can't get back home again. And it's just, you know, I'm thinking, why would a child like this? But they love it. They love it. And I think this is the, this is someone, Oliver Jeffers is an absolute genius. And I think he's someone who is well established enough. He can take these kind of risks. But I would worry about a book like that, that parents won't buy it. You know, I possibly, I don't know why I had it.
I think it was on the Greenaway list last year.
Yes, but I would not have gone into a bookshop and bought it, which was so wrong. Actually, then my experience taught me you can't make those decisions.
Mm. One of the nice things about these awards, and the fact that the Carnegie in particular, is that it's chosen, well, they're all chosen by school librarians, but also in conjunction with children. So there's a whole shadowing process. It's administered by the by CILIP in the UK. So you actually do get children's input as well, which I think is brilliant.
It is really important, isn't it? And all of us who have children will remember those books that, to be honest, we got sick and tired of, because I say that because when you've read it 150 times over, you just long for something new. But children love that familiarity, and they love that knowing what happens. And we couldn't get with this same particular grandson child, it took until he was four till we could get to the end of I'm Going on a Bear Hunt, because he was just too scared about the cave bit. But we would read it through to that, and then we had to put it away. But he's finally, you know, that's okay. So I just love children. Absolutely, I share this love with Yvette, with all of you, that I think children's literature is probably the most important literature that there can ever be, because it's what, and from a academic point of view, I'd like to hear your viewpoint, but it has so much influence on us.
It does. And one of the things we talk about on the programme is the relationship between authors and children, because that's quite a powerful relationship. If you're writing a children's picture book, the ideas, the ideology, the messages that you put in that book are very influential, and you've got to think about that when you're choosing books. That's what you've got to think about, and that's the thing that we talk about on the course, is the messages that come within these books.
So what about Horrid Henry? You see,
I love Horrid Henry.
But another grandmother who's the same age as me, she said, you know, I really don't like Horrid Henry. It's not sending the right messages out, etc.
Oh, yes, but I mean, my mother never, ever let me read The Magic Finger by Roald Dahl because she said it was subversive. So she would never read it to me because she thought it was giving me the wrong message. And I think as adults, we spend a lot of time reading and understanding things in books in a totally different way that children do. And they find bits and meanings and parts of it and grab onto bits that we wouldn't see at all. And actually, it's not subversive, and it's not teaching them a funny message. It's just that they're enjoying a different part of it. And I think it's really easy for us as adults to get very on our high horses.
I agree. And it should be a safe place for children to explore ideas and to come across.
Yes, and it's the way that you can explore those things with children, particularly difficult situations, you know, blended families, all sorts of different family structures, death and dying.
There was grief, loss.
You know,
there are some wonderful
bullying,
books out
all
there.
All sorts of books that you
that
can
are very subtle.
Yeah.
And I saw a series of books that was produced. I'm not going to say more about it, but it was totally unsubtle. And it was about, you know, Stranger Danger and things like this. And it wasn't produced by an author who had that understanding. It was, this is a good idea, let's do it. And it really was wrong. And that then sort of led me to think, actually, it's so difficult. You need tremendous skills to have this, as you coming back to what Yvette said, the safeness of being in this situation. And you know, how can a child deal with that?
It is difficult. If you think about some of the campaigns when we were little, they used to have this campaign with Charlie and his cat on the radio. Do you remember that, Yvette? And that was about Stranger Danger.
Remember.
They were absolutely petrifying. Even now, if I see one on YouTube or something, I'm frightened of them. It was a really frightening campaign. So you've got to think about...
So that's wrong, isn't it?
It is.
It gets
it's got to be... like you say, it's got to be safe. Mm-hmm. The child doesn't, you can't frighten children into these things. No. What you've got to do is raise awareness. That's what you're trying to do, is just raise awareness.
It's like the old Tufty road safety campaign, which I do remember.
With the squirrel.
Well, the one who was always getting run over by as he was running out to get his ice cream. But when was that? Okay, that was 50
years ago.
And I can remember it.
Mm.
But it worked. Mm. I've never run out behind an ice cream van. Mm. Let me just tell you that.
No, not me, actually. See? Right.
See? But reading does definitely, for children, it increases their empathy. It increases our empathy because it gives you that opportunity to think about Horrid Henry and if you were on the receiving end of Horrid Henry and things like that. And all of these books, you know, Roald Dahl, I think it's absolutely brilliant because it gives children, it empowers children. You know, I always think about Matilda and all of his characters who are in a world where things are against them, but they come out as winners. And so there's this really strong message.
Yes, and children they want to have a baddie. They want to see, you know, those things are all part of their life. And actually that's why, I mean, it's obviously why Roald Dahl has lasted for so long, because there are those twits that are so horrid to each other. And all of those people that do something a bit mean and just slightly dark, that really appeals to them. This sort of saccharine, you know, skipping down the street with a little bunny, is actually, that other stuff is much more important, I think, because it gets them thinking
about it. The image, Quentin Blake's image, who's won the Greenaway, I'm sure, many times, of them where they stick everything on the ceiling when they've gone out. So they come in and they think the whole... I mean, it's just genius. Yeah. I mean, who could have thought of that? And children look at that page and they don't want to move on. They want to, you know, absorb into their inner selves all that picture says, because it is just... And I mean, that partnership, Roald Dahl and Quentin Blake, was made in heaven.
Yeah.
Absolutely made in heaven.
Mm.
Yeah. But I've got a quiz question, which is, as Yvette said, we are celebrating the Greenaway Medal, which is sponsored by the Chartered
Institute of Library and Information Professionals.
Yes, good for them.
CILIP.
Was Kate Greenaway an author or an illustrator? So it's a yes or no answer. Please send in your text to 4001. Please put your name and please put your age if you are under, what shall we say, 14?
Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah.
If you're under 14, tell us how old you are. And also, if you've got a favourite picture book, if you're a mum, a dad, you know, someone, let us know what your favourite picture books of all time are. We would love to hear from you. And we're going to take a short break and we will be back with our special All Singing, All Dancing medal program today.
From Shakespeare to Tolstoy, Stephen King to Danielle Steele, this is Talking of Books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye 103.8. Now, back to the team.
And welcome back to Talking of Books. And we are about to dive into the shortlist for the Kate Greenaway Medal 2017. And just a quick reminder of the quiz question. Can you text in to 4001 and tell us, was Kate Greenaway an author and an illustrator? Yes or no? That's who the medal's named after, the medals for illustration. There's one or two clues there. So do let us know.
And her illustrations are absolutely beautiful.
They are.
Just so. And apparently it spawned this whole fashion.
Yes.
That children were then dressed in the style that Kate Greenaway, how she drew them.
It's like Mabel Lucy Atwell with it.
Yes, with her little things. But she very sadly died of breast cancer in 1901. So she was in her early 50s. And this was posthumous,
Kate
Greenaway medal.
18 years ago. So,
a long time.
We better get onto the books.
Yeah.
So, Mary Rose,
yes.
You're going to be in the hot seat first because you've had the chance to have a look at Wild Animals of the North, illustrated and written by Dieter Brown. So in this case, we've got the same writer and illustrator, but it's in translation, so translated by Jen Kalesia.
Yes, there seems to be an awful lot of books coming out at the moment that are lovely, big, non-fiction books, which are really beautifully illustrated with beautiful descriptions and are much more attractive to have. I suppose they're children's equivalent of a coffee table book. And there are a few of them. Wild Animals of the North is just lovely. It's beautiful to look at. The illustrations are gorgeous. They're quite... They uses shapes a lot, and they're just beautiful to look at. He's written another one, I think, that's coming out. Wild Animals of the South is the next one.
Makes sense.
Every time I go to Waterstones at home, I go and it's always there on the front, and people, I always see people buying it. It's a really lovely book and a lovely way to get children who perhaps aren't so keen on reading fiction into being a bit more appreciative of the aesthetic and looking at beautiful things while learning something as well.
So what age group would you say that Wild Animals of the North would be for?
Oh, well, I mean, I would say primary school age, actually. It's a lovely book to leaf through and mm-hmm. look at pictures of and see how they've made things, read the descriptions. I can see all ages actually enjoying it. I don't think it's a particular there's a particular age group that it's intended for, but it is just a lovely way. But there aren't photographs. Mm-hmm. It's just lovely illustrations, and I think it's lovely to be able to start talking to children about that mm-hmm. and how illustrations can be used in a non-fiction text as well as a fiction mm-hmm. one.
And I think, again, to reiterate, that the Greenaway Medal is for illustration, so it's not for books for young children, it's not for books for under fives, it's purely looking at illustration. Yeah. I think that will be brought out as the hour goes on, and we look at all the other incredible books we've got for all ages.
Yeah.
So you're quite liking Wild Animals of the North.
Yes, yes, I am. I am liking it, but I think there are so many of them to like. the other one is The Journey, mm-hmm. Written and illustrated by Francesca Sanna, which is a really wonderful book about refugees, and it's an amazing way to get children started on the on thinking about what's happening in the world at the moment. It is, the illustrations are stunning, and very particular. They too are quite geometrical, and just beautifully put together. The colours are beautiful, mm-hmm. and the story is about a family who have to leave their country, which isn't named, and their journey to another country. And we have used it at school. We did an enrichment program called Global Citizenship, and they use that with the little children to start off talking about refugees and people moving across the country. Everyone loved it. It's a really lovely book and a lovely way to start talking about some quite big issues.
Mm. And beautiful. All of these books shortlisted are on the shortlist because they've been voted there by librarians and by children.
Yeah.
Across the world? How far does
it go?
No,
it's UK-based. But what's interesting is the first two books we're talking about, one was originally published in Germany, and this one, I think, was originally published in Italy or Switzerland. So it's inclusive. It's
although there has been some controversy this year, I think, with both of them, that they haven't had such a diverse mix. Everyone is white.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's nice to see that they're not all based in the UK. Mm. And that journey is really gorgeous. It would have been lovely for the Lit Fest last year. Perfect.
Oh yes, it would have been when the theme was journeys. Yeah. Yes, yeah. And I mean, it's her first picture book.
Yeah.
So I think that's, again, I think, you know, all credit to the getting to this shortlist, which I think is so diverse and also so meaningful in today's world. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
You know, because no one can escape from what's happening in the world around us.
No. Yeah, and that is a really, it's a beautiful story, and the pictures just make it really, it's a lovely book. It's a beautiful book to hold.
Mm. So again, for this one, what age group would you use this with if you have this
Well,
in
we
school?
Were, I think we were using it for years 1 to 3 in that part of our program.
About sort of, but actually, 6 to 8 years.
Yeah, actually, you could just as easily use it with year 6. Mm-hmm. And it's a really good way to approach all of this stuff.
Yeah, because, and that's, it's the very beauty of a book that is apparently a simple book, that you can bring so much out, which
exactly.
you obviously can with this one. Okay, so we've got two down and several still to go. What should we have a look at next?
I've got The Wolves of Karrenpore here.
Wow, that's very different.
Which is another very different one. Beautiful book about America in the 19th century, the Old West, set in New Mexico, about a pack of wolves. And it's a true story based on Ernest Seton's story about he went to try and get the wolf, kill the wolf, but he became a great conservationist. And the book is, I mean, it's just, again, we were saying before, we have children that come into the library that aren't very keen on reading fiction books. And this book, as well as the other book he wrote, which is Shackleton's Journey, are brilliant ways to get children to read. Mm-hmm. It's based on a true story, so that's great, because it's non-fiction and it comes from the non-fiction section. But it's beautifully told and incredibly... I mean, the illustrations are gorgeous. The colours are amazing. It feels beautiful. It's a lovely big book with thick pages and little vignette pictures. And he's done it all with a pencil, and it's very sketchy and very particular, the illustrations that he does. And if you've seen Shackleton's Journey, it's very similar to that, with tiny little pictures of houses. And... there's a glossary at the back. There are further readings. There's an appendix. There's lots of things that can get you further on from it. But it's just lovely to be able to enjoy reading something that's so beautiful.
It's also not text heavy. And exactly. I think, again, this is a brilliant thing. If you have a reluctant reader, and they open a book and it's full of squiggles, black squiggles, it's not going to be inviting. But this book, anyone could open it up.
Yeah.
And you can follow a lot of the story through these incredible illustrations. It is almost like cartoons,
yes,
in that, or comic style, but so much more beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really gorgeous book. And I was looking this morning in The Guardian. He'd done a breakdown of how he made his book. And he went and travelled to the places and did sketches. And I mean, there's so much in here. And you can really feel that he spent a lot of time researching it and going to the places and seeing it. It's just gorgeous.
He's very young. I mean, he's already won the Greenaway Medal with his first book on Shackleton's Journey. And at that point, he was the youngest to win it since 1960. So he's got a fantastic career, yeah, stretching, yes, ahead of him.
I know. I mean, it's a hard act to follow.
It certainly is. But obviously, he's doing well so far. Is there any indication at the end of the book what his next topic's going to be? Because they're quite varied so far.
Yeah, no, we have. There's nothing. There's no clues. We'll have to wait and see. I'm sure we'll be sitting here next year talking about the next one.
Yeah. You better get it out soon. He's almost missed the deadline. William Grill, not a name I knew. And that, again, is the joy of doing the research into things like this, is that for us too, we come across new writers, and I think having somebody who's done the non-fiction side is and recognised for that is brilliant.
I mean, those books, Shackleton's Journey and The Wolves of Currenpool, would make brilliant gift books, because
yes,
are they're quite a good size, aren't they?
Yeah.
And they're the sort of book that you would treasure on your bookshelf, and you could take it out at any time. As Louise, I mean, I can see you're very taken with this
It's a lovely book, absolutely lovely. It's one of those ones that you would keep. You know, but my children are now 15 and 18, and I've got a selection of picture books that I've kept for the grandchildren, because I'm waiting
Me
for that.
Me too.
Yes,
keep waiting.
You know, and you get some of them are ones that you keep, and that's one that you would keep.
Yeah. Like, and I'll tell you what is the joy, having beat you both to the post with four grandsons, is the mothers are finding their books that they loved as a child and sharing that, you know, from the thing. And I've still got my children's books, so there's like three generations, and it's just amazing how much joy there is and how many memories they have, you know, and they'll remember things that because it's part of their childhood, a really strong impression.
Definitely.
We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with this more wonderful programme dedicated to illustrators, children's books and joy of reading.
From Shakespeare to Tolstoy, Stephen King to Danielle Steele, this is Talking of Books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye, 103.8. Now, back to the team.
And here on Talking of Books, we're talking about all things children's book related, and we're looking at the shortlist for the Kate Greenaway Award for Illustration and the Carnegie Award for Fiction. So let's move on. We've had some wonderful books to hear about so far. Now I've got one in my hand here. That's quite a big book, I'm going to say. Now it's a book that will be very familiar to listeners, because it's Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone. But J.K. Rowling herself is not up for an award. However, the illustrator of this new edition is. So Jim Kay was commissioned by Bloomsbury
to illustrate the entire series, which he's working his way through. And the one that's been shortlisted this year is Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, with stunning illustrations. I was very worried about this book because we all have our own images of what they look like, whether it's from the original books, whether it's from seeing the films. And I think he's done a fantastic job, actually. So he's carried some of the likenesses from the films over into his illustrations, but he really has made them his own. This really is a beautiful, beautiful book to gift to Harry Potter fan, and not surprisingly, I gifted it to my children, who are 28 and 30, but grew up with Harry Potter. So for them, they probably won't ever read this one, but I think it's a beautiful, beautiful book to own. And he's done things like he takes the dragon eggs, which feature in the book, and he has illustrated them. So you've got a whole series which looks like, you know, the pages you used to get from old books of alchemy and herbariums and things like that. So he's done it in that style, so it looks quite medieval. Really, really recommend this one. As I say, it's not a book that you're going to go and pick up and pop in your backpack to take on holiday, because it's a fairly hefty book and it's a fairly expensive book. But I think as a gift, if you've got Harry Potter fan, this one, but then you've obviously got to continue with the rest of the series. So I think Jim Kay has done a brilliant, brilliant job.
And he
illustrating
almost came.
He did almost come.
When it was, the first book was being issued.
Yeah.
But he was chosen by, I don't know who.
By Bloomsbury,
I think,
in conjunction with JK.
To do it. And there would have been a huge kudos. But the actual work it entailed, he was under such tight deadlines that he could not afford to take a day off. You know, it was a real pressure he was under. So sadly, he didn't manage to make it. But maybe when he gets to the end, it will be lovely to have him. And
he worked
at Kew Botanic Gardens in London. And he's got, as an illustrator, I don't know if they have an illustrator in residence or what they do, but it is a really, really beautiful book. And books as objects are something that more and more in a digital age will be things that we treasure. Just imagine going into a home that has no books because people have, you know, sort of invested in everything digital. You don't have your history there. It's like photographs as well. You know, I more so now that we don't print photographs, I have to have lots of photographs around the house of different, you know, different times, because you forget it.
Yeah. I was trying to have a sneaky peek at people's bookshelves when I do, so just beware, should you ever invite me home.
You'd be in my house a while then.
Yes. Yes.
Mine too. Yeah.
Absolutely.
You'd walk around my bookshelves, it might take you an afternoon.
Likewise, Louise. Yeah. Yeah. And in fact, then there's all the boxes in storage in the UK. There's the odd bookshelf or two in Friday to think, should they ever be reunited?
I think he's done quite well, really, to be shortlisted. If you think about how pervasive Harry Potter is, to be able to come up with something new in terms of illustrations.
Yes.
He's done very, very well.
He has. But he's actually, did he win? I think he's an actual winner from before, because he's also, he won in 2012 for A Monster Calls by Patrick Ness, which again, they are stunning illustrations. And he really captured that book. I don't know whether you've read it or seen the film, but the illustrations that Jim Kay did for that again were brilliant. So again, a fairly young artist who's doing incredibly well. Isabel, do you want to remind people of the
quiz question?
Yes,
of course.
So
we're talking about the shortlist for the Kate Greenaway Medal. And the question is, was Kate Greenaway an author or an illustrator? Text your answers in to 4001 and let us know whether it is a yes or a no. But also let us know if there's a book, a picture book, an illustrated book that you absolutely love that we may not have heard of on the radio today.
Excellent. So get those. And we've got some books that we can be giving as prizes to, either from the 2017 festival or possibly even one of the books that we're talking about today. You never
but
know.
But not that Harry Potter
not
one.
Not Harry Potter.
We
know.
We
it has
have
got
any of those
Charlotte
in the
Judge written inside it. You're not getting your hands on this.
I wish, yeah.
Something completely different now. We have Chris Riddell, who has illustrated a book that's been written by Michael Rosen. So two of my favourite ever people coming together in one book. And it's called A Great
big cuddle. Louise, I think you've had a
I like this. I think what I like about it is that they're all poems, but they're all very different. But the illustrations dominate. It's not the words on the page that are important, it's the pictures. But you've got sort of nonsense poems next to what we were talking about earlier, which was to deal with difficult issues with children. And there's one that's just called I Am Angry. And it's written in, it starts off in red, and then it gradually, the colours go to black, which is, or grey, which is much calmer. So this would be a great idea to talk to children about what makes us angry, what do we do when we're angry, you know, how do we overcome those feelings, you know, is it okay to be angry, and so on and so forth. So this is a nice... And it's got a the picture's hilarious. It's a little mouse who looks very, very cross. And even his eyes are red. So he's sort of looking out at the page and you're thinking, oh, yes, OK, he's a little bit upset with me. What's he upset about? So this is, you know, this is, again, it's one of these books that would appeal to a nursery because it's something that you could use as a starting point for something. You know, let's talk about this. Let's talk about our emotions and our feelings today.
I think it would be great if we can just actually move away a little bit from the illustrations because, as I say, Michael Rosen is one of my all-time favourites and I think we can hear him reading from the book.
I am angry. I am angry. Really angry. Angry, angry, angry. I'm so angry, I'll jump up and down. I'll roll on the ground. Make a din. Make you spin. Pull out my hair, throw you in the air, pull down posts, hunt down ghosts, scare spiders, scare tigers, pull up trees, bully bees, rattle the radiators, frighten alligators, cut down flowers, bring down towers, bang all the bones, wake up stones, shake the tiles, stop all smiles, silence birds, boil words, mash up names, grind up games, crush tunes, squash moons, make giants run, terrify the sun, turn the sky red, and then go to bed.
Wonderful. Oh. And like all good children's stories and poems, it has that particularly comforting ending because when I've done all that and I've finished,
I mean, how many parents can appreciate that at the end where this has been about I don't want to go to bed right now.
Exactly. And it's like it reminds me of where the wild things are when you've got Max who wore the wolf suit and got to a mischief of one kind or another and he ends up going to bed. Now I have to say, going through this, guess what, Chris Riddell has also won the Green Away before. So I'm not quite sure what's going, so he won it, I think he's won it for several things actually, Pirate Diary, Gulliver's Travels and The Sleeper and the Spindle.
I think it was The Sleeper and the Spindle by Neil Gaiman.
That's
which
right.
is an incredible book.
Yeah.
But it's not a children's book almost. I put that safely on my shelf because I absolutely love the illustrations.
But that's the thing. When they're judging this, I do not know how I would begin. Because we are looking at books that are incredibly different. So we're looking purely at illustration. And it's... You know, we're not really, almost not comparing light with light, are we?
I mean, exactly. No. It's like trying to judge, you know, the difference between a bunch of flowers and a bunch of bananas.
It is.
They're so different and they're all doing such different things. These illustrations in the Chris Riddell ones here, the colours are so beautiful. And the pictures are just gorgeous. It's impossible not to smile when you're looking at them.
Yes, yeah.
I wonder whether it's about... to what extent the illustrator has developed the ideas of the words, the text.
Exactly, yes.
Because I often wonder what the relationship is like between when you've got an author who doesn't illustrate their own books, how that relationship goes.
Sometimes they never meet. It's very
That's
common.
That's very strange.
So I know when we had John Doherty and David Tasseman came to the festival 3 years ago, David has been illustrating John's books. They had never met before they met in the green room in Dubai. Whereas somebody like Sarah McIntyre and Philip Reeve, they work together incredibly closely. But it is not unusual for author illustrator who have not met. I don't think, you know, Francesca Simon has probably met Tony Ross, who's one of the Horrid Henrys, very few times. I mean, they did an event together here.
So it is an interesting one, actually.
It is, because that relationship becomes iconic. If you think about Roald Dahl and Quentin Blake, they are inseparable.
Yes.
And if you pick a book up that Quentin Blake has illustrated that's not Roald Dahl, you immediately think that it's going to be along the same lines. Yeah. It's going to be as fun, as interesting as... Because that relationship does become iconic, doesn't it?
Yes, definitely. So it's an interesting one, actually, and how publishers make that work. And I'm sure, you know, authors, I think, get a say in, you know, do you like this? Do you like the approach? But actually, if you're a first-time writer and your publisher's pairing you up with an illustrator, you know, you're quite lucky to be getting your book published.
Yes.
And I think that you would not have that much say in what the illustrator does with your book, which must be quite disturbing sometimes, because you must have your very own very, very clear picture.
I think a few of them, though, have illustrated and written.
Yes.
Which is always
Tony Ross. Tony Ross writes and illustrates, doesn't he?
And the two here.
Yes.
These, Wild Animals of the North and also The Wolves of Karen Paul. Those two. And for me, I just think you're getting a double whammy there.
Definitely.
Because hearing about William Grill going and visiting all those places, you see, I'm just going to have to go out and get that book straight away. I can't not. It's just that I want to own that. I want to be able to have that and read it and just, you know.
Yes, and feel it. Yeah.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah. And of course, Chris Riddell has just finished being Children's Laureate in the UK. Yes. And there's a new one.
And now he's president of the School Library Association.
Yes, indeed. So he's moved on to
very
that.
Very important for us.
And Lauren Child is the new Children's Laureate. So
I love Lauren Child.
Yeah. Mm. Mm. Yeah. Yes. So that's the hot news from the UK. Right. We are going to come back very, very soon to finish off our Kate Greenaway roundup.
From Agatha Christie to Jeffrey Archer, we've got it covered. Talking of books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye 103.8. Now, back to the team.
Welcome back to Talking of Books. And here's some more questions for our listeners. So the first question, we're going to be talking about Emily Gravett's book, Tidy. Has Emily Gravett ever attended the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature? So that's, again, that's a yes or no answer. And also, who was the Children's Laureate from 2015 to 2017? And our first question today was Kate Greenaway, whose name this medal and award is named after, an author or an illustrator? So you've got three questions there, 4001 for your answers, and let us know your age and your name as well. And we will announce the winners towards the end of the show. But I can tell you, you are not going to get a copy of Harry Potter, and the Philosopher's Stone. That's going to be taken out of the studio under armed guard.
Actually,
I reckon.
If I had a copy of Tidy by Emily Gravett, you might not get a copy of that either.
Oh.
But thankfully, that's not in my care.
Okay, so that's our next book.
It is indeed. So again, Emily Gravett has also won the Greenaway Medal twice.
I'm not surprised.
There's a bit of a theme here. So I love her work. My favourite is the one about the rabbits, which explains the mathematical Fibonacci sequence in a rabbit-like way. And now we've got something a little bit different. So we've got animals in here. We've got Tidy, and it's a badger called Pete.
This is the one with of all the books that we've looked at, this is the one with the most story, the most plot, as well as the illustrations in it, because it's a proper, this is a more like a sort of proper standard picture book with a little bit of writing on each page and a lot of illustration, and it tells a proper story about a little badger who likes to tidy up. But the illustrations, I mean, even from the cover pages, there's quite a few you get through quite a few pages before you even get to the story, because all of the end papers are illustrated as well. It's a beautiful thing. And I use Emily Gravett's books on the early years program Middlesex because she writes some postmodernist books, which is where stories tend to draw attention to their own fictionality. So you get characters who speak directly to you. So there's a series of books about a cat called Chester, for example, not Emily Gravett, but somebody else. And he speaks to the reader all the way through the story. Mm. So it's sort of drawing attention to the fact that it's fiction. But this one is slightly to the side of that, because although it's anthropomorphic, so it's animals as humans, it's just it's a sort of straightforward story about a badger who likes to tidy up too much, and he ends up covering everything in concrete and then regrets what he's done and has to undo it all. So there's some nice, you know, there's nice poignant ecological issues within the book. But the illustrations are quite fun. At the very end, there's a rabbit with a rubber glove on his head, and a toilet brush in his hand. So they're very. There's lots of fun, lots of things to look at, illustrated in a very simple way, in the kinds of way, in some respects, the way a child might do a drawing. Mm. There's things falling across the pages, which again is quite postmodernist. So things going from one page to another.
There's a lot of movement.
It's lovely.
Isn't there?
Yeah, yes.
A lot of movement, yes, within the illustration.
This is a fantastic, yeah, book to read aloud. I'm sure Mary Rose, have you tested this one?
I read this and the tribe. There is a tribe of kids, mm-hmm, an FS2 class, and I wanted them to tell me which one they thought was best.
And
they laughed a lot at Tidy and loved it. And we this movement, there's a wonderful bit where the birds are using one of those drills to break
pneumatic
up concrete
drill, yes.
And we were talking about how she made it look like they were moving even though it's a still page. They thought it was really funny and loved it, and there was lots of stuff to talk about why you should do that, bad things about putting up concrete, you know, having trees and all of those things that children love. They really enjoyed it, and it was very funny. There's a lovely bit at the back where he's hoovering up the words at the back of the page. Mm. And the hoover's there, and it's very humorous and because the words are in rhyme, it's also very lovely to read and listen to. And the pictures are just full of funny little things to see. It's a lovely book.
So you can tell we are quite loving Emily Gravett in general, mm, and Tidy is definitely getting, I think, a few votes from us.
Age, what age range would you recommend?
Well, I read this to, so FS2, they were four and five. I read it to my children, who are 5, 7 and 9. They liked it. Mm. I mean, it's just a lovely book to read before you go to bed. Lots
definitely
to see,
yeah,
lots to talk about being friends, yeah, with people and caring for your neighbours and all of that sort of thing. It's just great. It's gorgeous.
Loved it. I think it's simple enough for younger children as well,
yeah,
isn't it? I think,
yeah,
you could go a lot
and
younger
that rhyme
than that.
Is so,
yeah,
good.
And there's lots of little details on each page, because she uses lots of different types of birds, lots of different animals, lots of different types of birds. There's a woodpecker on the page where the birds are trying to break the concrete. There's a little woodpecker pecking at the concrete as well. So there's lots in here that you could talk about, what the different types of birds are, and you know, what does a woodpecker do? Why does he do that? And so on and so forth. It's absolutely lovely.
And now for something completely different, as they say. So Emily Gravett, perfect read aloud story for younger children.
Yeah.
And now we've got The Marvels, illustrated and written by Brian Selznick. And here is where the Kate Greenaway sort of comes into its own, because as I say, it's not an award for a picture book, it's an award for illustration. Now, I have been allowed to touch this book, which Mary Rose owns.
I had to touch it. I wish I did. I think I will own it.
I think you have to own it.
It's one for doing weightlifting with as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's quite a heavy...
It looks
like Grey's Anatomy.
Absolutely, yeah.
This is not a
book
for little children.
No, hardback, gilt pages. It's beautiful.
It is beautiful.
To look at. It really,
I want to
really
own
gorgeous.
This book.
So the front is gold embossed, and then on the back is a, and the spine is a pencil drawing of a boy with glasses. And at least half the book, 400 pages, I think he said, is his drawing.
So shall we hear what he's got to say about the book himself?
I'm Brian Selznick, the author and illustrator of The Invention of Hugo Cabret and Wonderstruck. I'm really excited to talk to you about my new book, The Marvels. I've been working on the book for 3 years in London, San Diego, and right here in my studio in Brooklyn, New York. The Marvels is told in two parts. The first part is 400 pages of pictures, and the second part is told entirely in words. The adventure begins on a ship at sea at night, and then we go to London, where we follow 5 generations in a family of actors. I like to think of The Marvels as the third book in a trilogy that began with the invention of Hugo Cabret and then followed through to Wonderstruck. And it's not a traditional trilogy that is connected by character or plot. It's a trilogy that's connected by themes and ideas and different ways that words and pictures can be used to tell a story. The Marvels is ultimately a book about how we define family and the power of storytelling. I hope you enjoy reading it.
Oh, enjoy reading it. It was just magical. I got it home from the library last night. I looked at the pictures last night. This morning, it took me 45. I was reading quite fast, but I had tears pouring down my cheeks as I was reading the
pictures. Face is still a bit blotchy. Just gonna say,
this is what children's. This is what literature is about. It's magical fantasy, but real and gorgeous. The illustrations, it starts in 1766. The illustrations are all pencil, and each page as you turn over is full covered in picture. And every time you turn a page, it's so clever. It's almost like a film. It's like it's moving. There's at the beginning, I'm just looking at a picture of a girl strapped to a mast, and you turn the page over and you get, it suddenly zooms in on her face, and you turn the page over again and it zooms in again, and it moves very quickly, these little pieces of action that's happening, but it's, they're on a boat. I mean, it's the
you would have these on your walls, wouldn't you? I would have one of these framed on my wall, without
they're just
any hesitation.
Incredible illustrations, and then the story that carries on, and then at the back, and it unfolds in so many ways. It's so deep, it's so magical. There's all sorts of stories, and it is about the magic of stories and those things we were talking about when you're little and you read those stories that stay in your memory for the rest of time. This is one of those, and this is a sort of a book about that magic of stories and how important it is and how they stay in layers in your mind and they carry on through the generations.
Just to remind you, we're talking about The Marvels, which is illustrated and written by Brian Selznick. I'm quite surprised that this wasn't shortlisted for the Carnegie as well, which happens, you know, sometimes you've got a book in both categories.
But this is for teenagers, really, isn't it? It is. You know, it covers so many.
There's some darkness in there.
Key emotions and things like that you would not be.
It's definitely for older children. And I mean, there is an awful lot in it, and it's multi-layered. But the message that comes from it is about the power of the story and the magic of holding things. And of course, at the end, you realise it's based in Spitalfields, and it's loosely based on the true story of somebody who had a house in Spitalfields and turned it into a living museum. There's just layer upon layer of meaning that you can unpick. And it's, I mean, it touched me in a way that a book hasn't for a long time.
Have to read this one.
But
this,
I wonder if it'll become an adult book in the way that The Curious Incident of the Dog in the, you know, we've had these crossovers, Wonder, etc., which really adults should not be deprived of these stories. I mean, we had that rather awful, we'll talk about that after Stephen Fry, Howard Jacobson. We'll talk about come back, we've got the news break. Do stay tuned to Talking of Books. There'll be more after this.
This is Talking of Books here on Dubai Eye 103.8.